Comic Book Club News gives you the comic book news you need to know first thing in the morning every weekday in the form of digestible 3 to 5 minute long podcasts. Comic Book Club News recaps breaking news stories from Marvel, DC Comics, and beyond, Monday through Friday. New episodes drop 6 a.m. ET in the Comic Book Club News feed, so they're ready for you when you're ready for the day. Comic Book Club News. You hear it second or third, possibly fourth.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. I'm Alex.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Special! I'm Justin.
And if you haven't already watched it on Disney Plus, please go do that, because we're going to get into spoilers right now. But this is a full-on Christmas special. They call it a holiday special. Let's be honest. It's straight up a Christmas special. As Mantis...
You don't touch on a lot of other holidays.
No, not a ton of Hanukkah stuff.
There's not even a menorah flying around here.
Mm-hmm. But this focuses on Drax and Mantis trying to save Christmas for Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord, who had it ruined back in the day by Yondu. So they decide to get him the perfect present. They travel back to Earth and get him Kevin Bacon. It goes predictably wrong in a terrible way, but we get some big revelations about the Guardians of the Galaxy and their continuity and their place along the way. Before we get into specifics about the episode and how it came together, what'd you think about this one, Justin?
It's fun. It really captures the like holiday special energy, where it's like there's not a ton of like big twists and turns. It's sort of just generally nice. It's like a hangout show. There's some good jokes. The premise of baked into Kevin Bacon being who they have to get, and the major touch point I had, I was like, genius, was Kevin Bacon saved a town through dancing. Star-Lord saved the universe by dancing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was like super smart and really caught me off guard at the great writing on that particular moment. But otherwise, it's just very light hanging out fun.
You know, one, I showed it to my kids, and one of their comments was, well, that was kind of cheesy. And it occurred to me, I don't know if I mentioned, I'm Jewish, right? We don't watch a lot of Christmas specials, so they're not actually used to that. This to me is a commensurate Christmas special. Like, this is exactly what you want out of a Christmas special. You want it to be heartwarming. You want it to be comforting, not necessarily too challenging. You want to get a little teary-eyed by the end with the emotion. You got some shout-outs with the animation at the beginning and the end that I thought was delightful and very fun, and the style of the classic Star Wars holiday special, much maligned Star Wars holiday special. You got a shout out to some claymation stuff. But overall, and you've got some songs and guest stars with Kevin Bacon. So I think it hit all the touch points. And in a very similar way to Werewolf by Night, the other special presentation that Marvel Studios has done so far, this feels like the sort of thing where it's like, clearly, this is set at a very specific place and time in the Guardians of the Galaxy's continuity. To touch on the thing that I was going to mention earlier, James Gunn apparently conceived this while they were doing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, but then shot it while they were making Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, presumably to double up on the budget and the sets and everything like that. But also, obviously, it works very nicely as a bridge there from Thor, Love, and Thunder to where they are going to be at the beginning of that movie. But this is a long way of saying, Werewolf Play Night, I said with that feels like the sort of thing, we could have one of these every Halloween. You could watch this every Halloween if you want. It's good for that. This, you could watch it every holidays if you want. It feels very, no pun intended, very evergreen to me, where you could just watch it every year and still get kind of the same emotions. It's just a fun time. I had a good time watching it.
Yeah. I will say, I think the cheesiness that your kids are identifying is something that, like, are the shows we watch now don't really do. Even the holiday specials sort of fit into the main type of storytelling that whatever the show is doing. So the fact that this stands out as cheesy is, like, I think a generational thing. Like, we always had, like, cheesy holiday specials growing up, and we need to expose these children to cheesiness. They're not getting enough cheese.
Well, things like... This is jumping all the way to the end of the episode. But at the end of the episode, after Kevin Bacon is being taken back to Earth by Kraglin, and Kraglin gives him the little speech you talked about earlier about how Star-Lord looked up to Kevin Bacon, looked at him as the great hero, even saved the universe because of them. And then he calls Kira Sedgwick, or Kira Sedgwick calls him on the phone, and he says, you know, there's somebody who needs to learn a little something about Christmas. And watching that from our modern perspective, I was like, oh, there's going to be a twist here. Something real fucked up's going to happen. And it didn't. Yeah. He performs a song and it's very sweet.
The fucked up thing was that he played a Kevin Bacon original song, maybe? I mean, I did not do any research on this, but that song, I was like, this isn't a known Christmas song.
Well, particularly, and I know we're jumping all over
Bacon
the place
Brothers
here.
Bacon Brothers a Ridge?
There's a bunch of songs throughout the episode. The opening song, the one that I believe the band is the old 97s perform, which was co-written by James Gunn, that they performed for Peter Quill. So funny and so good. It has been stuck in my head since I listened to it. That is perfect. Like, that is a perfect Guardians of the Galaxy holiday song. To your point, having Kevin Bacon be like, yeah, I'm just doing a Christmas song at the end. I was like, ah, this is not as good.
But I also think that I feel like when they put this together, they started with, all right, what makes a Christmas special? And it's like big guest star, dumb / interesting songs, and then heartfelt moments throughout, one little lesson learning moment. And they had that on the table and they just threaded the needle with our characters. Because to jump back to the beginning, I was surprised by they were like, well, we run nowhere now, so we have to do this thing. And I was like, oh, they're really like putting us into the continuity in a way that I didn't expect them to do or really need them to do. I guess that explains why they spend the whole time there. And we should shout out to Pete LePage, who he used to do this show with us.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where he is. I think he died of happiness after watching the holiday special, something like that, because they had, and I'm sure you're about to tee this up, a very special Marvel flip.
Marvel flip with snow.
Snow and comics. There was also their classic Marvel Christmas comics throughout the Marvel flip before they went to a snowy Captain America, among other things. Very sweet, very fun. Yeah. I did. Normally, it drives me up the wall having to talk about the Marvel flip every episode. This was a fun one. It was good. I had a nice
time. We didn't because there's less shouting. I have less of a chip on my shoulder. I don't have a chip flip.
Speaking of that, actually, I think that's a nice tee up for something that I'll throw out that I also really enjoyed about the special. Maybe this will be controversial to some people. I really don't think it is. This was better than Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 to be. And the reason is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, the humor is a little crasser and meaner and louder. And particularly there's like a lot of shouting and calling people idiots in a very sharp way.
Right.
And so I came in ready for more of that. Instead, you have the same sort of thing where, yes, there is shouting. Mantis calls Drax an idiot, I think, several times. But the way that Pom Klementeff in particular shouts, there's a level to her voice. It's a gentle shouting, exactly. And it's much funnier. Like, it gets the humor across. The humor was moderated correctly here, where it wasn't to that movie. And I was very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I mean, the portions of this, there was like the buddy comedy, buddy road movie with Drax and Mantis were really fun. And the soundtrack of her sort of gently shouting and him just laughing maniacally, like through the whole back half of them kidnapping Kevin Bacon, he's just laughing through the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. Like, so I hear you. This definitely felt like it was sort of taking care of the crowd a little bit, which I thought was cool. I think it's also we've seen Peter Quill be sort of a bummer for now the last three times we've seen him.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, sort of. I at this point, I'm like, okay, we need to break out of this a little bit. And I like where we end up emotionally with him that we can get to in a minute. But when we started, I was like, geez, Chris Pratt, fresh off the Mario controversy. He's looking rough.
I was very struck because Chris Pratt has become a controversial figure online for sure. People really, really hating on him and finding him bland and boring, excuse me. And I'm not going to fight against that necessarily because I've certainly got that feeling as well. Mm-hmm. But what I was really struck by here is his transformation from, to use comedy terms, crazy man back at like Parks and Rec or even the first Guardians of the Galaxy where he was the weirdo, where everybody's like, what are you doing, you weirdo? And now he is straight up the straight man in this episode. He's the one that everybody's reacting to. He's shutting it down.
He's Captain America-esque in the way that everyone is just reacting around him, trying to like be like, he's square. He's not going to get it.
What do you think? Do we need Chris Pratt as Star-Lord at the very least to get back to being that weirdo he was in the first movie? It sounds like that's kind of what you want.
Yeah, and I'm curious for the larger sort of super story of the Marvel Universe. Are we going to get him chasing an alternate universe Gamora in Guardians 3 and that be sort of a main storyline as we get into like Secret Wars and all that? Like, it feels like he is still so down about that and not able to move past it, that almost has to be the main driver for him. The fact that we've let that character be that way all this time means to me, and I'm sort of surprised by that, that makes the whole story of the MCU sort of pinned on Peter Quill messing up during Thanos, Gamora getting killed, and now him trying to make peace with that.
Yeah. I guess we'll see. The other thing, though, is there's the big revelation in this episode beyond laying in the nowhere thing. The biggest emotional crux of it is that Mantis, it turns out, is Peter Quill's sister. And my impression of the way they played that is everybody is putting their feelings on Star-Lord. They're like, oh, Kraglin tells this story about Yondu ruining Christmas forever and ruining it for Peter Quill. We later find out that, no, it didn't actually. It bonded Yondu and Star-Lord even closer. Mantis is very scared. And it's very cute. That's how he got his guns. That's how Yondu got the little figurine. And Mantis is very scared to tell Star-Lord, oh, your dad who killed your mom is also my dad. She thinks that's going to be a terrible thing, but it turns out to be a great thing. So a little bit of it is maybe he's moping around, but more everybody seems to think he's moping around when maybe he's actually okay, you know? I don't know. I guess we'll have to see.
Well, no, that's a great point. And it also makes me think, like, the first movie was all about his feelings, and we were very much riding with him throughout it. And now we've pulled back, and we're just through Avengers Endgame and Infinity War. We were very much like, this guy's messing it up. We were looking at him, and we haven't really transitioned back to being in his head. And I imagine that's where we're going to get in Guardians 3.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see about that. A couple of other things that get teed up here. I'm going to look up her name because I always get it wrong. But Maria Bakalova, is that how you pronounce it? Who was in Borat 2. She does the voice of Cosmo, the Russian cosmonaut dog who we saw escape from the collector's collection in the first movie, I think. And finally shows up here, voiced by her. It's a telekinetic dog, has a relationship with Rocket Raccoon. I thought this was a very fun addition to the team, a great character from the comics, and I like the spin out of it. How'd you feel?
Agreed. Like, we don't get a ton of time with the non-Mantis Drax and Star-Lord Guardians, but I really like the Rocket, Cosmo, Hang here. Groot's all grown up, which is fun.
I'm not totally sold on yoked Groot. You know, like going from the skinny tree dude that he was in Infinity War and Endgame to being like jacked. It looks a little weird to me. Are you on board with it?
It does look a little weird, but he might grow out of it. You know, he's like in some sort of a teen or tween situation.
I think they refer to him as a teen, but I have to imagine at this point it's like 16, 17, something like that. Like, he's starting to get interested in, you know, the opposite sex. He's working out at the gym a lot, trying to get yoked on the football team, maybe. Maybe he takes you under the bleachers, slowly cups your face and kisses you ever so lightly on the mouth, works his hand down your... Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. I'm working on some...
Since it's not a separate project, you are Groot in a way.
Yeah, I am Groot. I'm feeling very Groot right now. A couple of other things while we're talking about the other characters, little moments here. Like you said, there's not a ton of them, but two things with Rocket in particular. I loved the whoa, calm down with everybody leave Kevin Bacon alone. And then Kevin Bacon says a talking raccoon. He immediately jumps into I'll kill you, and grabbing him out of the air. Very funny. Also, great callback with Nebula gifting him Bucky's arm. That was very
fun. Yeah, that was really fun. That Nebula is just, you know, as you talk about Star-Lord becoming a straight man, Nebula is just a joke machine. She's just all comedy all the time. I love how intense she, like, at the end, she's like, I guess not all actors are pieces of shit. It's like, yo, that line reading is so bracing. Like a glass of cold water in the face.
This is making too much of connection between things, but when I heard that line, my mind instantly went to the whole flap that's been going on online with Quentin Tarantino's statements about how Marvel superhero actors aren't the actual stars, it's the characters, which kind of has a point there. Like, not, you know, it feels very like, why are you
into the debate?
I don't know, but it was very funny to see people flipping out about that Quentin Tarantino quote and then watching this where there's a whole running joke about what pieces of shit actors are.
Yeah.
That's all. But yeah, she was great.
Agreed.
And one other thing that I just wanted to throw out before I forget, there's a very quick shot of her very intensely and angrily dancing to the band at the end.
Yeah.
Very fun as well.
Yeah. It's great. She's working on all levels. I was just going to say, the whole thing with like online debates like that about like this characters are the stars, really both are like the characters are like the lead, but some of the movies you're there for the actor too. Also, different audiences go for different things and you need both inherently. Otherwise, you don't have a movie that will appeal to the largest number of people possible, which is literally the entire point.
Yeah, there you go. What else can we shout out here? We mentioned most of the characters. Yeah, go ahead, Justin.
I want to talk Yondu for a second here, because who knew that Yondu is going to become this like emotional touchstone character through all these movies now, and now this special. Like, we get again Yondu being this like soft-hearted person who like really takes care of this. He's the dad that Peter Quill never really got. And I just always have Michael Rooker playing the role. He's such a sandpaper voiced dude. And the fact that he's become this one of the most emotional characters in the MCU is just funny to me.
It's great. I love how they played it out. I loved how they played it out through the animation, which is very purposely cheesy. And like I mentioned before, is the shout out to the Star Wars holiday special. It's great to have him back, and it's a great way of bringing him back without necessarily having the actor involved. I know that James Gunn loves working with Michael Rooker. Before I forget, he also brings in Flula Borg very briefly as a bartender who showed up as Javelin, if I remember correctly, in the Suicide Squad. Which brings us to another quick topic. After Eternals did this, we once again get a reference to Batman.
I was going to bring this up.
In the MCU.
Don't like it.
It's very weird.
It's very weird. It feels like a flex, especially with James Gunn now working at DC. It's sort of like that makes it even weirder. Now, that was probably not a thing that was happening when this line was put in there. So not to be conspiracy theorizing about it, but I just agree with you. Like, it's so weird. All the Superman stuff and Eternals, the Batman stuff, it feels like a flex. It feels like they're like, we're not, it's like they're so JV, we can say the name of their characters and not even worry about the competition, which is like, it's like it's picking on like your little brother in front of your friends. It's like, get out of here with that. I don't need it. I don't like it.
My problem with it, and I think we talked about this with Eternals as well, and I know this is a very specific nerd brain problem, but I start thinking about how do they know about Batman? in the MCU, are there Batman comics? Is there, are there Batman movies? Is there a Batman TV show? Does Batman actually exist and work out of Gotham City, which is the MCU? So, like, there's too many questions there beyond the fact of, like, why, let's say, sake of argument, they have the same level of Batman fiction that they do here in our world. Why do they have that? They have actual superheroes. Well, how does that work?
And I guess you could say that in the Marvel Universe, DC comics are a thing. That's how they know about Batman. Mm-hmm. But Marvel comics probably aren't. So in a way, in the Marvel Universe, DC comics are way more successful than Marvel comics. Or they're way more successful than they are here on the in our world. So if anything, they're really damaging the Marvel brand over the, in their own universe.
It's just strange. It's something that, like, in a special that otherwise I'm enjoying, it distracts me a little bit, and I don't want to be distracted about thinking about things externally from what I'm watching at the current time. Maybe regular viewers have no problem with this, because honestly, most people are like, oh, Batman, when is he going to join the Avengers? So they probably don't care, but I care. I care a lot.
That's right. And that's what this podcast is all about, our petty grievances. And here's another one. We established that the GoBots are a thing in the Marvel Universe in this, which I thought was funny as well.
That is one, and this is where, like, I think you get a comedy line there, right? Like, the Batman reference is fine. The GoBot thing, I totally agree with you. It's the same thing. I'm like, wait, they have GoBots and they watch GoBots here? But it's so funny that GoBots killed Drax's father? Is that what the thing is?
And that's the implication. GoBots are real.
Yes. Yeah. That's how you get past this stuff, is by making it ludicrously funny. It made me laugh out loud when I heard that line. The cut to Drax beating the shit out of the GoBot about a minute later, also very funny. That's how you excuse that stuff.
Yeah. Very fun, and I and the other implication here is that GoBots beat out Transformers. That's maybe are we saying that's a pivot point in the Marvel Universe and led to the Age of Superheroes? And in our universe, we chose Transformers over GoBots, so we don't get heroes.
Oh man, I want to go back in time. I want to fix that. We got to change.
GoBots are better anyway.
They were. I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
A couple of other jokes that I'll shout out there. I'm looking up the name. I'm definitely going to mispronounce it. But the very casual way that Star-Lord, when he sees the guy in the band, and he's like, oh, hey there, Baser Miko Tokalak, or whatever his name is. Yeah. Just like very quickly. That made me laugh out loud. The whole setup there. I think that guy, that's Rhett Miller. And I think the band is the old 97s. They did a great job just being like,
love them.
Walking this line of we're clearly needling Star-Lord, but doing it in a way where we're doing it very friendly. Very fun.
Yeah.
That bit was very fun.
Light roasting.
I also appreciated the fact that Mantis and Drax went to Earth and committed so many crimes, which you kind of forget they're not actually heroes. Like, they walked the line and that was the whole point of it. Like, they started as criminals. They end the first movie being like, do you want to do something bad, something good, a little bit of both? That's the line at the end there. And here they rob people. They kidnap Kevin Bacon. They beat up police officers. A lot of stuff going down.
Yeah. But fun.
Yes. Any other moments you wanted to call out in particular, Justin?
I think that hit all of mine for the show.
All right.
Great sweaters, and the way they emphasized Kyra Sedgwick throughout this, I thought was just a funny, like, no, look, we did it. I was like, okay, we get it.
That was very fun. The last one that I wanted to call out was the whole bit with Drax and Mantis stealing the stuff from Kevin Bacon's yard and Drax being so focused on the weird little man. I thought that was very fun.
Yeah.
Him thinking a candy cane was a man was very fun. And then Mantis's check-in with the police officers after she goes to make sure they're alive, be like, hey, here's this. And then the pause. And then, that doesn't look like a man to you, right? And the way she sells that line is like, clearly, she wasn't sure about this. It is great. I think everybody was having a delightful time, and ultimately that's what I want out of a holiday special. So good stuff.
I think that's a great point to sum it up. They're having a good time. It seems like they're having a good time making it, and that lets us have a good time watching it. And what more can you ask for at this time of year?
Exactly. Before we wrap up here, why don't we go to our vision board? What do you want for Christmas? I'm kidding. What do you want to see off of this? And I know we touched on it a little bit. What do you want to see either from Marvel special presentations, Guardians of the Galaxy, etc.?
I want more of these. These operate as one-shots from the comic book world, which is some of my favorite stories growing up reading comics. So I would do these seasonally or a quarterly, however you want to refer to the passage of time, whether you're into money or love. Make your choice. I think they're working. I think they're giving people that just additional dimension that doesn't feel so deliberate and like tied up into the major story in a phase that doesn't seem to have a major story. These were bright spots for me. And going forward, the Guardians, I want to sort of get Chris Pratt to finish mourning Gamora and figure out what his next move is in general, or move inexorably toward trying to find another Gamora in down the multiversal track.
Totally agree with all that. Very excited for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 now. I have said this before, but I was a little hesitant after Volume 2 because it is not my favorite source of humor in the MCU, but this is very encouraging in terms of the direction, so I'm very excited about that. And totally agree with you about the specials coming up. Let's have a Valentine's Day special, some sort of romance of the MCU. That sounds great. And then we got to have a classic summer special, like the old Marvel swimsuit specials back in the day. Have everybody have a beach adventure or something, you know?
Yeah.
Punisher. That's a great way to bring back Punisher, John Bernthal, in that classic skull gun swimsuit.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great. Or we could do like a Battle of the Network Stars style summer fight between our favorite soups.
Any way they want to go, I am there. And if you would like to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We'd love to chat with you about the MCU. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the podcast at Marvel Vision Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
Stay holiday-alicious. Oh!